how many bees is a swarm? Is two a swarm or three? Whatever. How many does it have to be?
And I'd be like seven.
It's Mike Shope.
How many times do you have to be stung to have been swarmed? And I was like, dude, I got swarmed. I got stung only once, but I was swarmed.
And the bulldog.
You insist you were swarmed.
There were bees, man. Like, plural. Big, lots of S's. Lots of E's in S. Bees. that was not
bees.
Fun.
Bees.
Right. That was not fun.
On WGR.
Hey, man. That kind of hurt.
Sports Radio 550.
Just realized I have five tabs open to ProFootballReference.com right now. I'll often have two. We're talking about one player a lot. James Cook, right? I don't have his page open right now, but like often it ends up being about James Cook or Kincaid today. And then I'll use a different one for whatever just comes up. And the next thing that comes up, I'll replace that with this. Jonnu Smith. I still have Jonnu Smith's page up from 2 hours ago.
So long ago now.
Dalton Kincaid. The 2012 passing leaders.
I barely remember.
That's all from today's show.
I barely remember the Jonnu Smith era of our show.
By the way, the Odyssey app has anything you missed. Go check that out. The 2012 passing leaders, because we were talking about
Flacco.
Like, who is Joe Flacco now? Who is 2012 Joe Flacco? That's their Super Bowl year. And you said Tua, right?
Yeah.
I said more closer to Burrow. You didn't like that. And so we went through that. Actually, the guy that you might, from 2012, this doesn't really fit with trying to name current guys.
Who compares Flacco now? Yeah.
But Matt Schaub is a name to know from 2012.
Matt Schaub had some years.
4,000 yards for a 12-4 Houston Texans team. Oh, wow. What a time to be alive.
Right.
Can you really remember how the drought felt?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Hopeless, never ending, which can lead to hopelessness. Fatiguing, demoralizing. These are all close to synonymous. But yeah, I remember. I never want it to be too far away, because it keeps me from feeling any sort of fatigue with how great this has been. Like, fatigue's the wrong word.
Complacency.
Complacency. Perfect. Right. I don't want to take it for granted. Because yeah, I mean, this is the best right now. You know, I started in 95, so I'm like right at the end of the best thing that we ever saw. And, oh, great timing, dog. Like, I'm going to be on the radio talking about the Bills. Little did I know what I was signing up for after the 99 season, and even that, like the epic heartbreak and all that. Yeah, I'm very much in touch with how the drought felt, I feel like, still.
Do you ever talk to somebody who gave up? You know how with the Sabres now, we're living it again with them? Hopeless. Really, I mean, you're saying that you remember it very well. How did it compare then in terms of this is never going to get right? I mean, I think of the Bills and the drought. And this is always going to be different. Like you, we have this conversation in a year, and you'll remember things differently every time. But in terms of hopelessness, while it's a sport that screams out to you how much parity there is, and any given Sunday and all of that, short season, you never know. It's two people that I think I would probably have felt mean will never win. Ralph Wilson and Tom Brady. Because of those two guys, like, I've just never, how can I beat them? Nobody can beat them. How can I do it? Although the Patriots did go like a decade between Super Bowl wins, should be pointed out. Still, I didn't need the Super Bowl. I don't need the Stanley Cup. I don't need the Florida Panthers.
Right.
I just want to be in the middle.
Yeah. And
one of these times.
And they were winning the division almost every year, even if they didn't get to the Super Bowl.
Right.
With Manning or Roethlisberger and Flacco all got their turns.
What was it? Like 14 years in a row, maybe, maybe more, New England, something like that. So
a longer run after Brady misses that year in 08. And then from there to almost the end, they probably won it every year.
I don't remember thinking they'll never be good. Like, there's no chance the Bills will ever be good. Yeah. But I do remember thinking they'll never win a championship. That hasn't been wrong yet, by the way.
Right.
But no. I don't think that right now.
Yeah, the hopeless, however fatiguing and demoralizing, whatever other adjectives I just used to describe what, do you remember what the drought felt like? You always had in your pocket, they just got to find their way to a guy. If I get a guy, then a lot of this, like, I don't know, maybe the guy, if Ralph Wilson's still on the team, wouldn't have overcome Ralph Wilson because there would have been other stuff that went wrong. You know, investing in scouting and just the whole thing. I don't know, all right? But that was a lot of the drought with the Bills was find your way to a guy. I got to take a guy. There were the points where you used to do, like, draft four quarterbacks every year and just try them. See, somebody.
I love that.
Maybe one of them is going to be Tom Brady for you or something. Just keep trying. There's such a level of importance on that position. Hockey does not offer that. Like, we've done that. That's why this moment in time for the Sabres feels so demoralizing. Like, we're out the other end. We're so far away from starting over with the high picks that the Edmonton Oilers are one of the oldest teams in the league, led by the guys that were at the top of those drafts for the Sabres. Like, they're middle-aged hockey players. Eichel's going to be a free agent after next year. Like, he's up for a contract extension after an 8-year contract.
He's played 10 seasons.
Yeah. So we did all that and, you know, didn't get the right guys, didn't get the rest right. However, you want, it's more probably the other stuff right, cuz Eichel and Reinhardt are superstar players in the league right now. Both have won cups, and Reinhardt's in the final again for a second year in a row. Third year in a row. Third. Excuse me. He's been there all 3 years. They won it last year. He scored the cup-winning goal even last year. So, you don't have that, right? Maybe the NHL equivalent of that is some goalie season you didn't see coming, where you just get a guy that's been, whatever, league average, and he's a 930 this year and 10 shutouts. Like, that's a thing that could save the Sabres. Anything else, I don't know. There's not a guy that I can go get that guy, and that'll fix it. Because there's no position in the sport, again, other than that outlier weird goalie year, that you really have, if I get a guy at this position, I'm all set. At least it didn't work here anyways. It worked out pretty well in Edmonton, as it turns out. Eventually. It took them a while, too. Yeah, I mean, they finally got to the final last year, and they are a game away from getting there again for back-to-back years. So, yeah, you always had that caveat about however hopeless the Bills thing felt. If I just get the right guy, I'll be home, or at least closer to home. And that has turned out here in this organization's case for sure.
Yeah, that's right. I hear about the days of advocating for the Bills drafting quarterbacks with every pick. Did I ever really go that far? Maybe I did. Like, what else matters? You know,
mm-hmm.
2011 is when they picked CJ Spiller at 9 overall.
Okay.
And with Jackson and maybe even Lynch on the team by then. I mean, Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And just that for me is being here that day, of course, driving home. I feel like it was dark out. If they started later or if the draft was earlier, I feel in my memory, this moment, hearing about the Spiller pick, it's dark out. And I'm pulling into my driveway of my old house and hearing the pick on the radio in the car and laughing. My reaction to it was just like, if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Drafting a running back. I don't think it was like shocking that they did it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember.
I don't remember being shocked at all because that Joe Biscaglia was our Sal then. And he'd had already a pretty good, he had some in, he had something.
It's not 2011, but
he had Spiller nailed. Like, he was talking to us. He was doing sports updates and was a regular part of our show then. And he was like, Spiller, Chan Gailey is going to love Spiller. They're going to get Chan Gailey Spiller.
2010.
So it was nothing. I wasn't surprised. It was still absurd. Like, every time Joe would say it, like, I wanted to take his word for it. But it also was, what are we doing here? Why do they want to do that? That doesn't seem like a good idea. Anyway, so I don't remember being surprised by it at all, because I think we saw it coming. Same thing with EJ Manuel a few years later. Like, Joe had that nailed, like the days, like a day or two before the draft. Like, the EJ Manuel, man, drafting EJ Manuel.
The Bills drafted Spiller at 9 in the 2010 draft. They went 4-12, and that season they had 6 rushing touchdowns. How long ago is this? I mean, we have Allen, who puts down more than that every year, sometimes easily. Last year was 12. Before that, it's Tyrod Taylor, but then it's like the Rex Ryan teams that were all LeSean McCoy. They're all about the running backs, the running game. And, you know, to varying degrees, so were these teams because of how they drafted. But still, that season, they ran for 6 touchdowns. Jackson had 5, and the other was Corey McIntyre. They had Lynch on the team for 4 games, then he was traded. Mm-hmm. He did not score a touchdown on the ground that year, and neither did Spiller, who was on the team all year, as the 9th overall pick. Yikes.
Did he have any receiving touchdowns, Mike? Okay,
good. He had 1. Are you happy?
Because, you know, they drafted him to be really an offensive weapon, not just a running back.
That's right. That team.
He's a slot receiver.
The 2010 Bills had 30 offensive touchdowns. And last year, the Bills had 30 rushing and 30 passing. They played one more game. That's where they got. Yeah. They scored 30 touchdowns that one more game.
We are living in a different dimension. It's not even the same sport. I mean, the league has changed somewhat. I mean, I might guess scoring average is at least a tick higher than it was back then. But still, I mean, 30 and 30 versus 30 for the entire team is pretty stark.
Spiller did have a kick return touchdown. I think I can see it. There was one at a game we were at in that press box spot where he came up the right sideline on a kickoff, I think. Still. So 31 if you include the special teams. Maybe they scored on defense a couple times too. I don't know. Who's Paul Hubbard?
Good question.
Paul Hubbard had a catch for the 2010 Bills. I don't know. I don't remember that name. What about Jehu Colcrick? Got that one?
No.
Jonathan Stupar.
I remember Stupar just because Stupar.
The team had us in a stupor.
Yeah, it was a perfect Bills player name.
How about Quinton Ganther?
Nope.
Oh, that is it can't be real.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bills Rando has
that
just broken out in here.
That can't be real. Quinton Ganther. I mean, it's not like they sat their starters here for games
right? No.
With a 4-12 season.
No.
Or maybe they did for that reason. I don't know. But he had 9 carries. Who is Quinton Ganther? Utah. He played for 6 years. Five years in the league. You got me on that one.
And this is not the 1960s we're talking about.
When
is this? 2010. Yeah, no. I have no idea.
Wow. He had 9 carries. 1 was for a first down. Let's go to Rob here. Hi, Rob.
Can't take that away from him.
You can't.
Hey, how you doing? I appreciate you taking my call. Jehu Colcrick, by the way, was a local boy from Weimer. Yeah, who
all
went
right.
to Michigan State.
Yep. Thank you. That's right. Good. That's right. Good job. Yep. Yes.
I just wanted to say, appreciate you guys taking my call. Yesterday, I was listening to you guys on the Odyssey app from your 3 o'clock hour, and I tried to call in at the 6 o'clock hour, but you guys are replaying one of your guests. So I didn't get a chance to call yesterday, so I don't want to derail your topic. But the Stephon Diggs thing is just, I'm insatiable about it. I really, really enjoyed your guys' 3 o'clock hour yesterday about it. I think that Stephon Diggs was misunderstood. Largely, I've heard Mike refer to, I think he's referring to the Cincinnati game, the playoff game where, Stephon Diggs was putting his arms up and stuff like that.
One play into the game. Yeah, right.
He did it early in the Bengal game and then on the drop at the end of the Chief playoff game, too.
Yes, I understand. You had mentioned something about like how he's showing up his quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot more of those things are not seen than are seen in respect to the fact that the cameras are catching it in respect to that. So I just kind of never really put too much credence into that because we don't know what was said and we don't know the exchange and different things like that. But my main point was that Stephon Diggs was very disappointed about 13 seconds, and I look at him more like a fan. I listened to him on Dan Patrick right before the Super Bowl, I think it was a couple years ago, and he kind of laid out just how his frustration had started to mount. And I agree with you guys. When he came in and that whole OTA fiasco and stuff like that with the actual mandatory minicamp, it was, yes, he was spoon-feeding everybody what he wanted to hear, what everybody wanted to hear in respects to his affinity for the Bills and wanting to retire a Bill and things like that. However, I do feel that it was a situation where just because he wasn't giving you giving everybody what we wanted to hear doesn't mean that he was disingenuous. I think that he wanted everything to work out, but I think that he was extremely disappointed by McDermott and 13 seconds, and I don't think he was ever able to get over it. And because of that, I think that it led to the fractions and the fissures in respect to the relationship between he and the coach and that type of thing.
Is that okay then? I mean, to be disappointed over a loss, weren't they all? Like, is that okay?
No, I'm not. Yes, and one of the things I've always heard is that, well, just because his fire burns bright and that he doesn't want to win more than anyone else.
Right.
I agree with that overall. However, because of the fact of how hard his fire burns and how bright it burns, I think that he was never able to get over it. So, yes, now I'm not saying that it was okay that he was never able to get over it.
Right, because he's got to own that. Like, that's his fault if he couldn't get over it. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't really change anything for me, I guess.
Yeah.
But all right. Thanks, Rob. I mean, that's always a discussion if a guy like wants to win so badly that it maybe affects him negatively. The example I'm thinking of is Ken Dorsey in the press box in Miami, where the game ends and the Bills lose and he smashes his tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one where even friends of mine were like in a rush to defend him because it's proof of how competitive he is. And like, what an insult to the grownups who are also are pissed off, but aren't smashing equipment like children. Like, listen to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's great to want to win. I kind of think they all do. And I think it shows differently. I just don't see how you get to that level, especially to Diggs' level as a star. I mean, how do you get there without a tremendous drive to succeed? I think it's one of the most, I was going to say one of the most admirable traits professional athletes have. It might even be number one, the work rate, because, to be born with the talent necessary is really, that's good fortune, but it takes so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I walk through the door sort of thinking of every one of them as having that piece. I was thinking about this recently for another reason, because I know I'm going to be wrong sometimes. I mean, I know there are guys who are gifted, and not everybody puts in all the work. And so it's an assumption you make. It's a broad brush, and you're giving maybe some guys too much credit. But it feels safe to me.
That's what I would mostly say. I think for some there, I think there are guys, and I don't want to name. I've always suspected this about Mario Williams, but I don't really know it, for sure. I have a pretty hard lean that I'm right in guessing it. For some guys, I think it's just transactional. That doesn't mean that they don't do the work. I mean, Mario Williams was a superior physical specimen, and you don't just get out of bed and have that. You got to do the work. But are you doing the work because you love the game and the sport and the competition, and therefore you love the work? Or are you doing the work simply because it leads to, you have these physical gifts, you'd be an idiot not to use them, so use them, but it's just to put you in a position to be able to reap the rewards. It's the job. And I think there it stands to reason that there would be guys that would be like that in their approach to the game. It's just this is the career I chose. I have this gift. And but, you know, am I burning to win? I don't know. I'm burning to make a life in this for 7 or 8 years and bank a bunch of dough and then live my life.
Right. I mean, there are, that's right. Relatively speaking, there are examples. You have to come with some passion for it, I guess. But yeah, it wouldn't be that everybody's the same. Not quite full circle to the 2010 Bills. Williams wasn't here yet
right.
as of 2010. Right. Right. One more thing about that team, as I look at their season, every one of their games was played on Sunday at 1 o'clock.
That tracks.
They had no West Coast trips. Their farthest trip would have been either Kansas City or, well, Miami. They went to Minnesota. They went to Green Bay. They never played a game that year that was not on a Sunday at 1. How many seasons have there been where a team's every game was played on Sunday at 1? You never even go into, like, Denver.
Right, right. Right, you got
let alone primetime.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of things add up there. Like, you're not good enough to rate any primetime or even the Thursday gift. Maybe this predates that. I don't even know about timelines there, where everybody kind of got a turn at a primetime game because of the new Thursday night package, and that's changed now over the years too. Mm-hmm. But so you got to be a certain level of bad, and the schedule that year has to line up that, like you said, you're not going to San Francisco or Seattle or Denver or the LA Chargers. And there's that year.
There's not a game in here where they just move you to 4 o'clock.
Right.
There's a 4:25. Are we to the 4:25 world yet? Man. Yes, it would be rarer now because of all the primetime stuff. Or even Europe.
Right.
The Bills would have had Toronto by then, I think.
They play in Toronto that year? 2010?
Was it over by then? Man, I don't know anymore. This is just, it's a blur.
Now I want to go find out. I'm gonna get this 2010 schedule.
They played
up
the
here.
Bears in Toronto, didn't they? Isn't this game
they
in
did,
Toronto?
They did play a Bears game that year, yeah. 22-19 they lost.
22-19 to fall to 0-8 on my 39th birthday, as it happens.
Holy cow. Yeah, no, this is Stevie Johnson. That's that year.
Yep.
Yeah. This is the birth of Bills Mafia is what that season ends up being.
Wow. All right. Timeout. Thanks, Rob. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog at 803-0550. This is WGR.